pianist extraordinaire Jeff Stice is with us today to talk about his career that's led him to the long journey that is now Triumphant Quartet.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
This program started off with a tribute to a great pianist, and it's been my tradition to never forget the musicians in our field, and I love piano players especially. And in fact, we've got the guy who plays on the theme of this show is Stan Whitmire, and his history has run some parallels with today's guest. In fact, today's guest now is the president of the Southern Gospel Music Association and is a member of Triumphant Quartet, but has a pretty long history in gospel music. And of course, I'm talking about Jeff Stice. So, Jeff, it's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Daniel. It's an honor to be a part of your program today.
And I was just looking over some history and learning some things about you and looking back at some old projects. You have been playing piano since you were eight, right?
Yeah. That's when I first started taking piano lessons. And, man, I was at my very first gospel concert when I was 2 weeks old. So I just kind of grew up wanting to be a piano player.
Wow. So you have parents who just love the music, or were they involved in it?
They did. My dad sang. My mom was from a musical family. She played piano in our church. My dad was a bass singer. And I don't know. They just kind of got me really, other than just taking me to the concerts, I kind of fell in love with it myself. Mm. And the rest, it's just been my life.
Where did you grow up? What part of the country?
I was born in Panama City, Florida. My dad was stationed at Tyndall Air Force Base, and I lived there till I was four. Then we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and I stayed there up until about 16 years ago, and then I moved to Pigeon Forge, and that's where Triumphant Quartet was started 11 years ago, and we've been together since. I'm a Kentucky boy at heart, though.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows me knows I am.
Yeah. Well, man, your music is great, and we're listening to a lot of the songs today of your piano artistry, stylings. I mean, it's just, it's good. I mean, and what you do, what you bring to the table with Triumphant doesn't go unnoticed either. And so, and you've been not a quartet guy the entire time, because I know you had time with the Neelands, and we'll talk about that. But what do you feel right now with Triumphant is your role, other than obviously playing the piano? I mean, it's a bigger job than that, isn't it?
You know, Clayton and I have this conversation all the time. We've been doing this almost 30 years between him himself and me too. And you know what? I feel like I know what quartet music is, but more than that, I've learned through the years what not to do. And that in itself, sometimes it is so beneficial. The saying less is more. A lot of times the things that we do away from the music, I've learned what we probably should not do and probably what we should do just based on mistakes I've made through the years. And I don't know. I like to think that there's a certain amount of on-the-job training that I was able to bring to the Triumphant Quartet for Eric and David and Scotty. Clayton, like I said, he's been doing it as long as I have. So sometimes, you know, they get our opinion on things, and it's not that we know. We just know what doesn't work.
And that has a lot. That's a lot about life, too. I mean, that's not just a musician thing. I mean, you can learn a lot about well, there's a lot of wisdom, what I'm trying to say here, and is what you and Clayton have brought to the table is, hey, let's stay away from this, let's stay away from that, and maybe even excelling at what you know is right is by saying no to the things that that don't fit right in the pocket with what that is, with what your mission is.
And absolutely. You know, people ask us all the time, wow, you guys have kept this together, you know, going 11 years, same guys. Well, a lot of that is due to, as you get older, you realize, you know what, this doesn't matter in the long run. In the grand scheme of things, this doesn't matter. This is more important than that. And when you're able to see the big picture, that our unity is our strength, then you're able to get past things. And when I say get past things, you know, you travel on a bus with six different guys just about every day of the year. Sometimes the bus can get small, you know. People ask, do we argue? And I always say, no, we just have moments of intense fellowship. But you do. You learn to love each other, and you learn that all five of us are different. And I'm sure I do things that gets on people's nerves. And so what? You know, you learn to go, you know, I've got four brothers that I travel with. And just like me, I argue with my sisters from time to time, but I jump off a bridge for them in a heartbeat.
Today to Jeff Stice. Jeff is the pianist for the Triumphant Quartet, a great solo pianist in his own right as well, and a great long history in gospel music. In fact, nowadays, as the president of the Southern Gospel Music Association, did you feel like that was out of the blue when they called you for that? You seem qualified to me, but I'm just wondering, from your point of view, from your perspective, how did you receive that invitation?
Well, Charlie Waller, who's the director of the SGMA, 3 years ago asked me, would I be interested in being a board member? And I have a passion for what I do, and I have a passion for this music, and I have a passion to encourage people, not tear them down, because after I'm dead and gone, I want there to be Southern gospel music. I want there to be people who love it as much as I feel like I do. And so when he called me and asked me to be on the board, I was like, yes, are you kidding? How fun. And so you get in there and you're sitting around with all these people that that you just love, and you know they love what they do. And you start throwing ideas out and all this. And I when Karen's run as president was up, they asked me to leave the room. And I said, wow, what have I done? And they said, well, we're going to vote on something. So I stepped outside the room, and I come back in. They all started clapping and told me I was the new president.
Oh, wow.
And it completely took me off guard because, you know, I mean, I've paid my dues, I feel like. Are there more to be paid? Probably. And yet it comes with the territory. But I was so honored. I love this, man. I really do. And in some ways, I want to do my part in leaving a legacy of Southern gospel. Not so much me as much as Southern gospel. And it's a tough job. It really is.
Dice is here. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, great pianist, and of course listening to some of his great sounds on the keyboard right now. So Jeff, tell me about your family, and when did you meet your wife? We'll talk about your gospel music career starting maybe in the 80s and stuff, but when and where did you meet your wife?
Oh gosh, now you get me thinking. That was a long time ago. I met Melinda. I had Perfect Heart, and Mark Lanier, my baritone singer, he introduced me to her, and she was a hairdresser in Nashville, and I saw her, and I was like, wowee, and he just kept arranging a little, hey, won't you come over and eat with me and Paula, and I'd go over there while Melinda would be there, and we kind of got set up, and we became friends, yeah. And it's kind of neat, because I dated her 3 months before she ever seen me do what I do. Mm. And I liked that about her, because I didn't want her to like me because I play piano. I wanted her to like me because of me, you know. And she's a great lady. She really is. She's got a big heart, and something kind of cool. We've just been invited to be a part of there's an article in the Singing News called Married to the Music, and they're doing a new video based on all that, and we're going to get to be a part of that. So we're excited about that.
Fun. Well, your gospel music history goes back to when you started taking, you said you were going to concerts in diapers, but really taking piano lessons at age 8, and then by the early 80s. I'm going to kind of read through some of these and maybe just give me, you know, the number one highlight that pops in your mind when you hear the group. But in the early 80s, the Monitors Quartet was on the list.
Wow. London, Paris. He sang bass.
Wow.
And London, anybody that's followed Southern Gospel down through the years, you know, he was one of the great bass singers.
Mm-hmm.
And had an opportunity to play for him. And I'm telling you, it was so much fun. He just, oh my goodness, the stories he would sit and tell me, and I was just, you know, enthralled by him. I just sit there with my mouth open, was just taking it all in. So it was a lot of fun getting to play for him. It really was.
Well, let me go down this road for a minute. You said your dad sang bass, and you traveled with London Paris, and then, of course, later with Rex Nealon and great bass singers, like, of course, you think of Eric Bennett, too. But if you were a bass singer, or you were going to relay some inside information to modern-day bass singers that you learn from these old guys, what would it be?
You know, I'm going to tell you something. If I was going to sing bass, there's three that come to my mind. I would want to sing a solo, a bass solo line, a slow song that requires singing from your heart like Eric. I think when it comes to singing a heartfelt song, he's my favorite of all time. When it comes to sitting down on a note and just rattling the rafters, you got to go with Tim. Tim Riley. I love his singing. He or London. London could sit down on a note and you'd think that the ceiling was coming through. And then the connection that George Jones had with an audience. He could take a song and he could communicate so well. Those are the three guys that I would want to sing a solo like Eric, sit down on a low note like Tim Riley, and communicate like George Jones.
Yeah, it's good. That's good. Well, from the Monitors Quartet in the early 80s, I've got the Blackwood Brothers down here in the mid 80s. That's not bad, Jeff. I mean, you're going from London, Paris to a legendary name like Blackwood.
You know, London had a lot to do with that because, you know, London sang bass with the Blackwood Brothers years ago.
Right.
And he got me involved with their school of music. They had the Blackwood Brothers Christian School of Music. And he had arranged it to where I would get in touch with the director of the school, Charles Novell. Well, Charles contacted me and asked me to send some samples of what I might teach and that kind of thing. Well, I got that job teaching at their school, and while I was there, the Blackwoods would come in and they would sing. This is with James and Jimmy and Ken Turner and Cecil. And I would come in and I would teach, and they would come in and they'd do a concert. Well, they got to know me a little bit, and they asked me if I would audition for them, and I was like, are you kidding, James Blackwood? And they, you know, some of my heroes played for the Blackwood Brothers, Wally Varner and Jackie Marshall, and asked me to do some stuff like them, and I would, of course, try, and then asked me to play some of the more up-to-date stuff, and then I would try to do that for them, and I guess they liked what they heard. I got the job, and traveled with them about 4 years, and buddy, everywhere we went, that was back during their heyday, you know, and just people just come from everywhere. It was amazing, the crowds that they sang to. Learned a whole lot about performing with that group. Great guys.
And then the Nealons were on the scene, and you were a part of them. And again, this was a big time for the Nealons as well. They'd made the transition from the Lefevers into the Rex Nealon Singers, and I guess probably by this time known as the Nealons. But and a trend-setting group. I mean, I recently sat down with Kelly, and we talked about their history and just looked at all the wow moments in the Nealons, not only staking claim in gospel music, but even branching out and doing things totally out of the box. Did you learn a lot working with Rex?
Listen, Rex Nealon is probably the single most important person in my life as far as Southern gospel music was concerned. The things I learned from him, I had to learn to play in every key. There was no such thing as a transpose button back in those days. And they would do their songs in B and F sharp. And, you know, if you're a piano player, you cringe at those. But now, because of Rex, those are some of my favorite keys to play in. And, oh my goodness, traveling, he let me stay. They had what was called staterooms on their bus. And, it was like four rooms. And, I got to stay in the room with him.
Wow.
And, it was just fun, you know, cause I would sit and talk old quartets with him and old songs, shape notes, that kind of thing. And it was kind of funny to see Kelly and Karen, of course, at the time, and Todd and all of them. They just sit there with their mouth open. They didn't know what I was talking about. And, Rex and I had a wonderful relationship. I owe him so much, so, so very much. And, I used to remember sitting with their album cover on my piano, just wishing I could play for the Rex Nealon Singers. And when I got a call from him one afternoon, he told me he was in a bit of a bind. Would I be willing to help them at the Joyful Noise in Atlanta? And I was like, yeah. You know, I knew every one of their songs, intros, keys, and went down there and I played for him at the Joyful Noise. He offered me a job. And oh, my gosh. They're just like Kelly, Karen, they're all just like sisters to me.
Wow.
We just had such a wonderful time in that group.
Well, if this question doesn't work, they'll take it out of the tape. But when you were with the Nealons, did you have a particular air freshener that you used or a particular hairspray scent that you used?
A hairspray. Let's see. What did I use back then? You know what? I do remember, too. This is hilarious. This is the first time anybody's ever asked me this. They used this hairspray. It's called Aussie, A-U-S-S-I-E.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to think it was the best smelling stuff. And I bought me a can of it, and I would use it. Oh, gosh, yeah.
It smells like grape Kool-Aid, doesn't it?
It does. That's hilarious that you asked me that.
Well, there you go. You never know. I mean, these buses, you got to think about it. They're homes on wheels. And people want to know, you know, well, if it's your hair and makeup room, it's a place where you sleep, you go and lounge, you cook a late night snack. It's got to have all these different kind of home type smells to it other than just the diesel fuel.
Oh, it does. It really does. Of course, traveling with Kelly and Karen, you know, they would leave their fingernail polish sitting around, their cologne, just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And, It's an unusual experience to travel with two ladies on the bus too. So let me say it this way: it's a lot easier to travel with a quartet, not personality wise. It's just that you have to make special accommodations for ladies when they're on the road with you.
Jeff Stice is with us today. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we've got these great sounds of Jeff's piano talent. And by the way, you can learn more about Jeff online. His website is jeffsticemusic.com. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Today, my guest is Jeff Stice, and happy to talk to him, learn more about his history. In fact, we're kind of tracing it back through the years, and there was like an 8-9 year window or so of this group called Perfect Heart, and I remember Perfect Heart, and it was 1990 to 1998. You were part of that group, and tell me how this came to be. This was after the Neelands, after the Blackwoods, and you've been on the scene in gospel music now for a while. So tell me what the decision process was like. Were you married at the time, or you were getting ready to be married, you said, right?
Yeah. You know, the whole thing was Perfect Heart. We, there was, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but there was a, put it bluntly, there was a millionaire in Mississippi that wanted to start a quartet. And his plan was to handpick the individuals for the group. He started off, he got Danny Funderburk from the Cathedrals. And Danny agreed to do it. And Danny called me. I'd known Danny a long time. And that broke my heart because it was a good opportunity for my family. Mm. And yet I loved Rex. And Rex urged me to go ahead, you know, and told me that the situation could do for me probably more than what he could do at the time. And there's no hard feelings. He understood. He was proud of me. And, man, I'm going to tell you, that was one of the hardest things I ever did was give my notice to the Neelands.
Wow.
Anyway, we got started, right out of the chute, we had a number one song, Somebody Touched the Lord. Sandy Knight wrote it. He gave it to us.
Yeah.
And some ways it was a curse because we never had another one. And one of those situations where I told you earlier that I learned so much from, whether it be what worked. I learned a lot about what did not work. I learned about life in general, as far as everybody having different personalities, and that was okay. And I wouldn't take anything for my time there because of where it's allowed me to get to with Triumphant now.
Mm.
And that was those were some fun years of my life. I traveled with some good guys, and they've all kind of gone their separate ways. I stay in touch with Mark Lanier quite a bit and Dale Shipley. And the rest of the guys, they're just kind of doing their own thing now. And you know how it is. You lose touch with people.
Yeah.
And but I wouldn't take anything from my time there.
Well, and they certainly made their mark in gospel music as part of the history. And as you have with your piano music. But I've got to say, you and I see a lot of piano guys doing this because there's the art form of piano. And you, with your lineup of solo projects, obviously hymn projects, Christmas music, gospel music, but then you've got some different ways you bring other styles of music into it. And I know you're a fan of like jazz, and there's a thing here from Broadway to classical that I saw that you've got some cool songs on, but even a tribute to Floyd Kramer. So what brought about all of this variety in you doing solo piano work in this vein?
Well, I tell you what I've always loved is I love good music, whether it's Floyd Kramer or Emmylou Lefebvre or Ray Charles or Roger Williams, Liberace, Dino.
Yeah.
And all of those are so diverse. But I grew up loving every one of them, and I grew up trying to learn different things that each one of them would do. And I've never wanted to be locked in to one particular style. You know, I look back and I can remember all the times when I would hear a lick that I wanted to learn. You know, I it didn't matter who it was, I would try to learn it. And because of that, I guess I got a little bit of all of them to become who I am. I know when I do solo dates, I'll kind of go on a journey of learning to play like this one, this one, this one, this one, you know, and I do some impressions of different ones, and I do it because I genuinely love them, and I love what they gave me to become who I am. Gosh, the list just goes on and on and on, my heroes.
Jeff Stice, piano extraordinaire, and of course, a wonderful guy to talk to and learn a lot about his history and a significant part of gospel music's history with Jeff today. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we're talking now late 90s. And so where were you living during the Neyland's based out of Atlanta, but then Perfect Heart, where were you living during that time?
Kentucky. I actually lived in Kentucky when I was with the Neylands. I would commute back and forth. It was 4 hours.
Wow.
And Rick said, didn't have a problem with me driving back and forth. He said, I can remember his plane yesterday. That's your problem, not mine. And he allowed me to live in Kentucky. And it wasn't until I left for Pitch and Forge a little over 15 years ago that I have ever lived anywhere else other than Kentucky.
Wow. Wow. Well, that call came and you joined Dollywood and started performing, which was totally different. Now you're out of Kentucky. That's difference number one. You've relocated your family, but you also have signed up now through performing there in the theater and kind of the theater circuit in Pigeon Forge to a more normal day job, right?
Yeah. You know, that job came along with the Kingdom Heirs at the perfect time in my life. We had gone through personnel changes with Perfect Heart. It was just getting harder and harder just to make a payment, a bus payment, let alone get a salary. Lots of weeks, had I not had some of my solo projects, I wouldn't have been able to bring home any money. Mm. And it just got to a situation where you just knew that the Lord was closing the door. And was opening up another one. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, the very last night that I wanted to keep trying. At the time, I had a young man. His name was Darren Doyle. He was singing lead for us. And I had undergone personnel changes. And coming home, I was trying to think, how can I make this work? How can I make this work? Okay, well, what if I sell the bus and we ride in a van for a while? You know, so my question to Darren was, Darren, how bad do you want to do this? And he was real quiet. It was just he and I on the bus. And I kind of looked in the mirror while I was driving back at him. And he said, well, I don't see me doing it the rest of my life. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, my wife would like for me to stay home more. And man, that just knocked the wind out of my sails. So I remember coming in and sitting down on the bed, and at the time, Perfect Heart was a record company called Sunlight, and Chris White had asked me the week before, would I be interested in playing piano for the Kingdom Heirs? Oh, that infuriated me, because he was my record company, and I sit down on the bed, you know, and Melinda sat down beside me. She said, you know, it would not hurt for you to just call and see what that's all about.
Mm.
And the only time that she ever even suggested, she was always supportive of me. And I picked the phone up the next day and I called Steve and I asked him about it. And he said, well, a job's yours if you want it.
Wow.
You know, and man, that just broke my heart, because I cried and sweated and bled over Perfect Heart, but it was time, you know, it was time to move on. I was near burnout. Instead of me sitting there, if you can imagine, I was the MC of the group.
Uh-huh.
And instead of me sitting there going, okay, Lord, show me what I can say or do to help somebody, I was thinking, Lord, please let us get enough to make a bus payment. Just please.
Yeah.
That's all I could think about,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, so I went with the Kingdom Heirs at Dollywood, and that's all I was a piano player. And I went from trying to book a group to trying to be a bus mechanic to this and that to just being a piano player. And I got my passion back.
Yeah.
For what I do. And at the time, Louise Mandrill had a show in Pigeon Forge. And her orchestra leader, his name was Rick King, he had gotten hooked up with Olivia Newton-John and would travel with Olivia when she would do, I'm saying Olivia like I know her. he would travel with her and be the director of her orchestra. Well, it was during these times, Louise had contacted me and asked me would I be interested in filling in her show at nighttime. So I was able to do my Kingdom Air job during the day. Then I would go over to her theater at night and be her orchestra leader, you know, and a wonderful opportunity. And she was so good to me through those times. And I remember the day she came to me and Eric and David. She had opened up her theater to do Sunday morning praise and worship services for vacationers who didn't have a church to go to.
Uh-huh.
And we would go over, and Eric sometimes would speak, and Dave and I would provide the music. She said, I need a group to put in my theater during the mornings. Would you guys be interested in starting a group? Well, my first thought is, there ain't no way I'm going to start another quartet because I had just come out of Perfect Heart four years earlier. And God just kept opening doors and kept opening doors. And I went home to old Melinda, and she was totally cool with it. And we started the Triumph Quartet and Integrity at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
To change her name, yeah. And she kind of gave us our start. And we were there at the theater about 5 years, and we decided to take the group and go on the road.
Wow.
And we've been together ever since.
And I want to talk more about Triumphant. We're talking with Jeff Stice. We're listening to great music from Jeff's piano skills, and it's here on Daniel, Britt, and Friends. Stick around with us. More to come.
Smile, what's the use of crying?
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. My guest today is Jeff Stice, pianist for Triumphant Quartet, president of the Southern Gospel Music Association, but also in his own right, an outstanding talent, I'm telling you, for arranging and playing. I mean, the skill at the piano, Jeff, I just want you to know I'm a fan. And
you're kind. Thank you.
And I'm a piano guy, too, so I listen out for things. My antenna goes up when I hear a piano player start talking about his skill. But I'm sure night after night you get kids and middle-aged people and old guys and gals alike probably coming to you who play or have an interest in playing, and they want to know this trick or that secret or this chord progression. What would you say is probably one of the most common questions you get from aspiring piano players or people who want to do what you do?
A lot of people want to know about chords and runs. They call them runs, you know, the little slick, fast hand thing with the right hand. Mm-hmm. And something going back to when I taught at the Blackwood School, Charles Nowell told me, being the first time I ever taught at anything like that, he said, if I can give you any kind of advice, it would be to never hide any lick or any chord or anything that you know. Always share it, and God will give you something else down the road. And that has stuck with me through the years, and I've always tried, if I've had time, if the group hadn't been in a hurry to leave that night, I've always tried, when people ask me what I'm doing, I'll actually walk them up to the piano, and I'll sit them down and show them. And because, you know what, I got my licks and chords from other people, and, you know, I'd be pretty full of myself if I thought I got to hide this particular chord, you know. Can't let nobody have my secret chord. So I've always tried to encourage and help in that area. I just kind of feel obligated to.
Wow, that's cool. Well, and what would you say is your word of caution, or maybe what you see lacking, whether it's in the studios or in the arranging, or even in the stage performance of piano players today? What is the weak link? What is the thing that you would challenge pianists right now who may be listening to make sure you hone up on this one skill? Would it be just the rudiments of music, or would it be actually reading music? Some people don't read music. Is that a weakness that frustrates maybe studios?
You know what? Of course, when you're working in a studio, it's entirely different than it is on stage. Studio is all about clean playing. It's all about quick. Try to be as quick as you can because you want to save the client or whoever's doing the CD. You want to save them money. If you keep messing up, you're costing them money, you know, because of the time. However, the art of playing the piano, I've always believed you ought to know the is that you're playing. I think if you know why you play a certain chord in a certain place, I think there comes a point where you understand how you can make it yours. As far as the performing part, this is something that has probably come to my attention more in the last 15 years than ever before. Like I said earlier, with George Jantz communicating, and if you want to admit it or not, as artists or as a gospel group, whatever, you're performing, okay? You are performing. And if your goal as a performer is not to move someone, whether it be by what you say, sing, what song you play, then I don't understand why you're performing. You know, if you love it, that's great, you know, but if you call yourself a performer, the one thing that wears me out is, oh, he's a genius. He's over everybody's head. Well, is he really a genius then? You know?
Yeah.
No, honestly, I know you've heard that all your life.
Right.
He's so far over everybody's head. Well, then, and don't get me wrong, the finger dexterity with which the geniuses play and their chord structures and all that, they're brilliant. I question sometimes the reason behind what why they do what they do. Is it strictly to make people confuse people and it's where they will go, oh gosh, that's just so much fun. I tell you what I've done, just in the last year and a half, I come out with a new solo project and I'm playing literally the most simple that I've ever played in my life with just the piano and no background music, and people relate to it better. It, as an artist, do I feel like I'm, I don't know, you know, because I'm moving people. And that should be my goal, to touch people. And I look out, play Mansion Over the Hilltop, just so simple, and I may see somebody crying or something other, and I'm thinking to myself, this feels as good as if people stood up, you know, to know that I've touched somebody, to know that I've made them go from feeling this way to this way. That's a powerful thing. And to abuse it. So my advice to a performer is know who you're playing in front of, know the age thing, the demographic, and just pay attention to what they like, and don't try to force them to like something, because if they like you, they're going to open up and pretty much like whatever you want to share with them. Mm. You know, I guess I can offer my opinion. I don't know, but it's the right one.
Well, it sounds good to me. And that's Jeff Stice, and you're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Of course, pianist for Triumphant Quartet, and you guys really have had a long run, I mean, as a tight-knit group that has stuck together. And you've seen some great changes through the years. In fact, Triumphant has risen to, you know, the top of your game in Southern Gospel. And I have to say this, though, as much as we love Triumphant Quartet, there's a song that you guys are becoming even, as time goes on, you're becoming even more known for it. And it's kind of funny because you're a straight-laced quartet, but this bluegrass-sounding song,
which
by the way, you know, for a piano guy, probably wasn't your favorite tune on the album either, but it's The Old White Flag. How do you reconcile this?
Okay, here's the deal. We've been doing the song for 7 years. Now, this is the truth. Diane Wilkinson sent me the song. And it was during the time when Old Brother, Where Art Thou came out, the movie. Diane, if you've never heard one of her, she's a brilliant songwriter. She's one of the greatest songwriters in Southern gospel music today. If you've never heard one of her demos, you've never really heard anything. They're just wonderful. They're wonderful. They're fun. And she starts off, she's got it on a cassette, and she says, "Hey, darling, I'm hearing this song, Grass, but I know you being a quartet man, you'll probably want to take it down that road, and that's fine with me." But when she started singing it, the first thing I thought of was, "Oh, brother, where art thou?"
Yeah, yeah.
So I take it in the next day. Now, this is a deep, dark secret I'm laying on everybody right now. I go in, I said, "Guys, sit down here for a minute and just hear me out." And I said, "We should do this song, just total bluegrass." I said, "Let me sit over to the piano and pout. And Clayton, you just do whatever you want to do with it." It just puts me in mind of that song, Man of Constant Sorrow.
Yeah.
Well, we get through with it, and Clayton looks at me and goes, "Well, maybe." He said, "That's not really me." And I said, "Well, that's why it'll work." So he goes home, and he's studying the movie and learning these moves and stuff. And he comes back, and we sing it the first day. And they just sit there and look at us, you know. But Clayton didn't do anything. He just sung it.
Right, right.
So Clayton, he tells it, he goes home, and he's practicing in front of the mirror. And he comes back the next day, and he starts putting all these little moves. Well, the next thing you know, we had at the theater what we called regulars. These were people who bought season passes, and they would come every day. They were our professional audience, if you will. They knew when to stand, when to clap. Well, one of them took out a hanky because Clayton was waving one. And then these other people would see this one take out a hanky. So the people who would come to the theater and see us were watching our professional audience. When that song came, they would take out their hankies and start waving them. And it caught on, and I'm telling you, people come in to the to our concerts now, and they'll look at me, and they'll shake a hanky at me and go, "Hey, Jeff," you know. Of course, I'm playing to them. I'll go, "Oh, stop that."
Right.
You know, but the whole time, I'm just thinking, yeah, baby. But it's a great song. The lyrics actually get lost in all the comedy stuff. But, we'll have to do that till there's no triumph and everything.
Yeah, I know. That's right. That's right. It's funny how that works, though. But
hey, lost sinner man, don't you know you can't win? If you keep on walking down the road to hell, one day you're going to walk right in. You're tired of listening to the devil's lies, burdened down so low. You found out that a sinner's life is a mighty hard road to hoe. Why don't you just wave that old white flag of surrender? Come down to the altar, let God save your soul today. You've run from the Lord since so far back you can't remember. Let him ease your troubled mind and wash your sins away. Hey, hey. Hey, lost sinner man, I can see through your tears. I can see you staring at the preacher's face. His words just calm your fears. There you go, running down the aisle, about to be born again. Very soon you can use that old white flag to preach to your sinner friends. Why don't you just wave that old white flag of surrender? Come down to the altar, let God save your soul today. You run from the Lord since so far back you can't remember. Let him ease your troubled mind and wash your sins away. Hey, why don't you just wave that old white flag of surrender? Come down to the altar, let God save your soul today. You've run from the Lord since so far back you can't remember. Let him ease your troubled mind and wash your sins away. Sins away. Let him wash your sins away.
But you guys are serious musicians. All of you, you've stuck together. You've got a bond. I mean, and you talked about it earlier. You said I traveled with four brothers, and sure, everybody's got moments, you know, you can't get around it. If you're in a fallen world, if you don't have moments, check your bolts. But,
well, yeah, you know, for anybody to say that there's never disagreements on a bus, they're not telling the truth.
Yeah.
What's admirable about the whole thing is that we're mature enough that if something does bother one of us, we talk. And our first 3 years together, we traveled in a van. We weren't able to get up and go to our bunk and shut the curtain. We had to deal with things. And because of that, we learned how to communicate with each other. And I'm telling you, it's communication. You're right. That's what's made us stick together.
Well, what are you looking forward to? I mean, because, you know, I know you've got your family and all the guys have their families, and yet you're still keeping this group on the road and the ministry and the, you know, honing your skill and the performance and all of this stuff wrapped together. And you could get a little bit overwhelmed and just stay with status quo. But obviously, I think you guys really think and you're thoughtful about the next steps. Can you give us kind of pull the curtain back a little bit and kind of give us an idea of how you're thinking and what you guys are thinking for the future?
Well, first of all, me and Scotty bounces ideas off me constantly. It almost gets funny sometimes because his wheels are continually turning. And I enjoy that because he reminds me so much of me when I was his age, you know, he's excited about it. And we're all the time coming up with new ideas for new albums, new ideas for how we could do this or how we could do that. And I think as long as those ideas keep coming, I think there will be a Triumph of Quartet. Do I think it can go on forever? I have no idea. I do know as of right now, everybody is locked in here, and we're just kind of doing our thing, seeing what God has, what door He's going to open for us next. It's exciting. It really is to know that it's the same guys, and I feel like we're over the hard part, getting to know each other. You know, we know who we all are. Our day consists, we'll find a mall somewhere. That way everybody can go do whatever they want to do.
Right.
You know, buses leaving at 3, you know. And I love to run. I get up every morning and I go run. And then I go eat at the food court, you know. I walk around the mall. And that's, you know, as long as everybody just keeps looking for ideas to do things new, you know, and not get complacent.
Right.
That's what I want to avoid, is getting stale.
Yeah. Hey, tell me about your kids, because we haven't talked about, we talked about your wife, but tell me about your kids and they're growing up. They're adults now almost, right?
Just about. Well, I've got 3. Yeah. The reason I don't have 4 is because I have 3. You'll get that on the way home. But they are absolutely the joy of my life. All 3 of them are just wonderful kids. Of course, they're mine. I'm going to say that. But they are. They're God has really blessed me with 3 wonderful children. And my baby is in college.
Wow.
And, my son is in a show over here at Pigeon Forge. He sings and plays guitar. And he's at the Smith Theater. And they have a Dukes of Hazzard theme show, and he plays Luke Duke. So he sings with it, and it's kind of fun. And then my oldest, Natalie, she teaches at a preschool in Kentucky. Nice. And I'm very proud of all 3 of them.
Great. Well, Jeff, I want to give it again your website where you can find everything. Jeff Stice is there, and that is Jeff. SticeMusic.com, and Stice is STICE, JeffSticeMusic.com. Of course, Triumphant Quartet is simply that, TriumphantQuartet.com, and you can find out more about the travel schedule and the music, and you guys putting out great things, and I've enjoyed hearing your piano stuff today. I mean, you know, a lot of times you might get 1 or 2 features a night, but today it's been about you and your piano artistry, and I've enjoyed it, Jeff. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you. I'm flattered with the opportunity to be on your program. I appreciate all the things you do. Without you guys, there would be no Triumphant Quartet. You enabled us to reach people that we couldn't reach at times, and you're very valuable to Southern gospel music in general. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You've been listening to Daniel Britton Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern Gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britton Friends.